This is the Fucking Normal Podcast, the cheers, tears and Friday night beers of parenting disabled children.
I'm Rena.
And I'm Lauren.
And we're both mothers to daughters with special needs. Parenting a disabled child can often feel difficult to navigate. If this is you, you're not alone. We're here to share unique parenting stories and chat about the things that we've learnt and are still learning.
Prepare to sometimes laugh, sometimes cry, but hopefully leave with a shot of optimism in your arm. And don't forget, we are talking from a parent's perspective. We would never presume to talk on behalf of a disabled child or adult. So expect bad language and, quite frankly, some brutal honesty.
Because really, what the fuck is normal anyway?
Wake me up, loud as clouds, all my love for you.
On today's episode, we will be tackling the idea of uncertainty. Life is full of uncertainty, but having a child with disabilities can make that feel like an understatement. Some more common syndromes bring some predictability, but largely having a child with special needs is full to the brim with uncertainty. And we're talking uncertainty on so many levels, from that pre-diagnosis anxiety where you have no idea what's going on to the post-diagnosis cloud of what on earth does this all mean? Then you've got the day-to-day unknowns and curveballs and the big fat slap to the face, be that medical or even developmental. But ultimately, the question is, what does this all mean for your child? What does their future look like? And importantly, how do we as parents learn to roll with the punches and live with so much uncertainty? So with that in mind, we'd like to introduce you to our lovely guest.
Hey, so today our guest is Miriam Elliott. Miriam is a comedian, artist, broadcaster, and mum to two boys, Sid, who's six, and Natty, who's 3.5. Sid has a rare form of Lee syndrome. It affects him in many ways. It's a mitochondrial and neurodegenerative condition, and most significantly, it impacts upon his balance, muscle, and speech. Sid is a beautiful boy. He's a happy soul who loves train sets and cars and has definitely inherited his mother's sense of humour. When I asked Miriam if she'd talk on the topic of this episode, she said, "Uncertainty is my speciality." And I look forward to digging into that in more detail, probably sharing some dark humour and wisecracks with our lovely guest. Miriam, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
And before we start, I just wanted to say congratulations to Sid on his success this week. Quite a big milestone.
My mind has exploded and I'm crying with delight. And everyone I talk to about it doesn't get what I'm talking about.
Tell us what's happened.
So basically, my son has toilet trained himself after 6 years.
And go Sid.
Obviously, when we talk about uncertainty, I was picturing that I would have to be changing him forever. I did not think he could do it. And he did it. And I just wanted someone to celebrate with.
Because,
yeah.
It's a shame we're not in person with drinks today.
I would love for like going to have a beer, but it just happened. It just clicked. I think on my part, I had to put more effort in because I felt a bit like resigned that, you know, I tried so like for so long that you just kind of think, oh, maybe you just have to do this, one of those things, isn't it? And then one day he got up and I said, oh, do you need a piss? And he just went.
Miriam is nodding her head for the listeners of the podcast.
We had a toxic way to the toilet. I pulled his chairs down and he did it. Wee! I was like, oh! And I gave him a kiss, gave him a hug, gave him a chocolate. I made it into a big deal. And obviously, then my younger one goes and does a piss. He's been toilet trained for years. And he goes, well, I want a chocolate. I did a wee.
Oh, cool.
I'm like, yeah, it's not special when you do
it. Oh, that's so cute.
That's amazing news.
So this weekend I was like, right, it's okay when you're at home and they can have an accident, you can clean up. I thought, you know, if you're going to go out, because I drag him around everywhere, you know, we go to like 3 museums in one weekend and adventure parks and we do a lot. And I thought, well, once he wets himself out and about, but he didn't, like wherever we went, went to the gardening centre. I said, do you need a wee? Put his hand up, took him to the toilets, did a wee. He was dry for 2 days. So I'm just like,
that's incredible.
Is the best news.
Yeah, the only thing is he's not telling me. I just have to, I'm just using a clock and like every hour or two, you know, like, do you want it? But just, it's control, isn't it? It's control.
Completely. He's having to hold it in. That's what Bee's like. I have to take her. She will not tell me. She's seven now. She will still, I just have to keep an eye. And I feel like I know her bodily functions better than she does, you know, or like, but we'll get there. It's all, you know, it's just so much. Yeah, it's amazing.
That well is done. The cutest thing.
I put Matthews in the bin the other day. It's like, not going back.
Oh, liberation.
6 years. It's amazing.
So why don't you, Miriam, tell us your story, you and Sid's story from pregnancy until he came into this world.
I'm from London. I grew up in Muswell Hill. My parents were both artists, and then they had me as an artwork, and I turned out to be a real person. The story of Sid ties in with my whole family history, because obviously before I had kids, you never think anything like this would ever happen to it. You know, that's part of having kids. You do that test at the beginning and you go, oh, it's fine. Everything's fine. So basically my mum's family were Lithuanian Jews that went to Wales in the 19th century. And there was this, they called it the curse of the family, like the brain disorder. and it went back a long, long way. So there's a lot of children that got it, but mainly, weirdly enough, it usually came out in people of our age. My grandma had two brothers who were doctors doing very well in their life, and suddenly they lost slowly the ability to speak, to walk. And it just got worse and worse. And I think it killed both of them eventually. But they would develop that in their 40s. And so there was something in the family, but it was very uncommon to think of a child having. So obviously that conversation was just never had. Me and Russell, my husband now, had our first child, go through the normal pregnancy. There was nothing unusual about the pregnancy. Sid was born and he looked angelic and very, very, very beautiful, which this is why the story of Sid is confusing, because he didn't look, there was nothing obviously different about Sid when he was born. In fact, people would come up to me in the street and say, oh, what a beautiful baby. Oh my God, here, have some money for the baby. Oh, bless this baby. He had this shockingly blonde hair and blue eyes and just like very, very, very pretty. And a real shock to me, because obviously my father is Middle Eastern. Well, I'm fully Jewish. There's no blondes in my family.
Oh, really?
So it was, you know, I was like, well, it's my son. Taken after his father. Anyway, basically when Sid was finally diagnosed after this kind of car crash of the first 2 years, I call it car crash because I had literally no idea what was going on. This beautiful child who just couldn't walk, couldn't speak, was falling all over the place, went deaf, had a stroke. I was like, Mum, what's wrong with Sid? And finally they took my blood sample, my mum's blood sample, and Sid, and they found this kind of defective mitochondria. And because it came from my mum and me, we now realize it was this the family, the first thing that was in my mum's family. So it was a huge shock for me and for my mum and for everyone, really, because so basically it helped explain what was wrong with my grandmother who had also mitochondrial disease, but a lower level. So she didn't become disabled, but she was, because it's to do with like a lack of energy, you can become like chronically fatigued and not able to function, basically just like lying in bed all day chain smoking. And that screwed up my mum and her siblings, because they thought that their mother just didn't care about them. So it's quite a sad story. A lot of the punk movement started in my grandparents' house because my uncle was one of the key people in the punk movement, and he was always mocking my grandma. But obviously no one knew that she was suffering from the same disease as her brothers, but a slightly different way. So, yeah, when we found out when Sid was diagnosed all about this mutation, my mom just kind of had a... I don't know what to say, but she, you know, imagine perceiving someone a certain way your whole life and then realizing that they were actually just sick.
But it must have been like a light bulb moment, but also kind of things probably went into place like a jigsaw puzzle, like, ah.
Yeah, it was exactly that. It was exactly that. And you saw my grandfather, like their marriage fell apart because he resented her for being lazy and schizophrenic and mad and all this, you know, because when they met, she still had energy. They used to go on walking holidays, but she had four kids and the mitochondria just declines with age. So the Lee syndrome is like, it's like a balance. Sid was born with 97%. So it was just happened from day one. But if you were born with like 70-30, for example, you'd be fine up until like something age. And then, so in a way, yeah, it was like a jigsaw. I think it was like a beautiful thing in a way. It was like an answer.
Yeah. Yeah. Your whole family, I guess, has got clarity and understanding from this.
And we also found that, so basically my grandmother's side of the family, a lot of them still live in Wales, and they were all petrified that they would get this disease. And my mum had to call them and say, it can never happen to any of you because you're all on the male line.
Right.
So it can only run through the woman.
Gosh.
That was like, they were, you know, and they'd been for years trying to figure out what it was. So Sid was like, it's tragic, but it did offer closure, I think, in a big way.
Mm. So you waited, 2 years to get a diagnosis?
Well, I think no one took me seriously for a long time because people are very shallow. He's very beautiful. Yeah, and no one would accept that he was disabled. I was continually told, oh, he's fine, he'll get there, they're all different and all that stuff. Because it's your first child, you have no idea what it's like. And I wanted to believe that. And then the turning point, I mean, I was already doing loads of physiotherapy with him and stuff to get him to walk. And I thought, this is a bit weird. Like, you shouldn't have to do physiotherapy to get someone to walk. Yeah, but I was still believing, oh, it'll be fine, you know. And then I think the turning point was when we went on holiday to Tenerife, and I was 9 months pregnant with Natty, and then he got flu. So children with mitochondria is much like, I mean, most children with disabilities, if they get ill, it's like, boom.
Yeah.
Yeah, not like normal ill. And he got flu, and I just let him watch telly and just sort of lounge about. And then he kind of got better after 4 or 5 days of a high fever. He started eating again and stuff, but I suddenly realized he'd had a complete stroke. So he just couldn't move at all.
Oh my gosh.
So when we got back to London, I think, yeah, this was when it was really trying for me and Russell, because Russell didn't want to think. And I was like, this is really wrong. This is not right. And that's when we got him into Great Ormond Street. And also I was faced with this like gunpoint scenario of my other son would possibly have it too. And I was so far pregnant, I was like, oh my God, like, what am I going to do? But I decided to go with what makes me happy, and that's my kids. So rather than whatever nasty thing could happen. So once he was diagnosed, they were able to give him things that help people with Leigh syndrome. So various like coenzymes, and within 3 months of, so he'd had a complete stroke, couldn't move, couldn't even crawl. We started giving him these coenzyme Q10, changed his diet. He was walking within 3 months, which is something he'd never
achieved. Wow.
So yeah, that was, and also that was just after Natty was born. So I was like very, very grateful. for that.
How did you deal? Because obviously you had your mother's side with all of these kind of symptoms. So, and then you had Sid who had similar symptoms, but not all of them. So there was loads of uncertainty. How did you deal with that?
I don't know. I'm a very positive person. I have a great sense of humour, and I've only been really, really depressed once, and I vowed to myself that after that, I was very, very depressed that one time. I think it was in my 20s that I would never do it again. I just try and make Sid happy, basically.
Yeah, I think that's the thing I've definitely struggled with, that just living in the moment and just thinking, because I'm historically, get over myself. I am traditionally a planner. Like I like to plan.
Right. And
control. And then you just have to go stop fucking planning and start just living. And I've seen that in you, in your things that you post about, like breaking into playgrounds in lockdown.
Yeah, I did that. Yeah. I mean, I understand that lockdown was different for everyone. I don't judge anyone on how they react to it. But to me, I was going, I'm going to do the complete fucking opposite. I'm not going to be scared. The only thing you could do is be happy and healthy and enjoy the day that you're given. And I mean, I maybe got that from the Bible because I was raised quite Jewish. but obviously, that's nothing to do with it. It was just my instinctive reaction. And he just started walking as well. So I just kind of wanted him to like really push on with that. So I dragged him out every day and forced him to walk as much as he could. And he was, oh my God, now it's great. But then he was falling like, it was like someone had just, you have to look after someone who's just come out of a pub and they're just falling all over the place because they've drunk too much, but all the time.
Yeah,
so he was just like trying to like enjoy everything and interact with everything and run free. And I had to kind of run after him. And I did a lot at the beginning. I did a lot of the, oh no, I'll help you if you fall over. But then I thought I can't do that. I've got a baby to look after as well. So I just let him fall over loads.
has his balance improved as a consequence of your unusual therapeutic method?
Much better.
Oh, really?
And he'd come home covered in bruises. And my mother-in-law thought I was abusive, like, oh, my gosh, my poor Sid. And I was like, no, it's good for him. He's fine. He's going to be fine. He has to go through this. We all have to, you know. But she wouldn't let go of his hand. And I always say he walks better when you don't hold his hand because he needs to use his brain is damaged where the balance is. So he needs to figure it out himself.
Find a center balance, yeah.
But he's such a great kid, Sid. Like he doesn't give me any grief. Like he's great and he tries and tries and tries. And he gets there in the end. He walked for miles, literally, like he uses his hands like, so that's how, because I realized he had a lot of stamina. It wasn't that he didn't have stamina. He did, but he couldn't deal with a big open space. So if you were like in a museum or an indoors, he could touch the walls and that would allow him to just keep going and gauge his balance. So yeah, the other day he walked for about 5 hours, like
with
two other children, like with Natty and our neighbours. We went to the Design Museum, the V&A, all the way around Holland Park.
That's incredible.
It is incredible. One thing I've learned from all this is like that these children make banal things incredible.
That's so true. There's the moments. I mean, you know, how much do you want to celebrate this amazing achievement this week that Sid's gone around in big boy pants? Those celebrations and highs and everyday things are huge. Not to go from positive to negative, but has there been times when Sid's taken a step back and how has that been? Because I guess on the topic of uncertainty, you know, you being a planner, I'm like thinking, right, well, you do this and then this happens and then do this and then something else happens. When something goes in the other direction, or you get a big kind of shock to the system of something you weren't expecting. How has that been with Sid or with you as a parent?
Yeah, I spent a long time being scared that he would be ill.
Right.
Because I knew what the repercussions were that. But then when I stopped being scared and said, no, this is an inevitable situation. I can't control when he gets ill. He has to get ill. All I can do is make him as healthy as possible, happy as possible. So when he does get ill, we get back to where we are as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
Because if I make him scared and whatever, that's just going to make it worse. And the last time he got ill was 6 months ago, and it was a fever. So I was petrified. I wasn't petrified. I was like, no, he's got the fever. It's like, if we go back to the beginning again, we go back to the beginning again. And he was noticeably wobblier for about 2 weeks, but then he's fine.
He got back there. That's amazing.
Got back there very quick, 2 weeks. And the way I do, I mean, it's kind of planning. I go, all right, well, the next 3 months, we're going to have to do all this work. But it turned out to be 2 weeks. But yeah, the toileting thing is huge. Like, I think when you're a carer, you're a mum, but you're a carer, and you think, oh my, in your head, there's part of your head going, oh, I might actually have to do this forever. Like, and then you realise that they can, and it's just like, oh, great.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one less thing. It's one step towards independence and one less thing that you have to do in that carer role.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. What's your approach to therapy then? So you talked about doing physio before you even had a diagnosis for Sid. Do you throw yourself into all the therapies with him, or are you employing your own Miriam style?
Yeah, I'm just doing things myself. I don't want my whole life to be a therapy session. Like, I think the best thing for him is, like, the best therapy that I could do was take him to the soft play that Natty loves, you know, and Sid tries to get around it too. And sometimes he does it more than Natty. And he, like, I often take a wheelchair, for example, if we're going to like a theme park, and it's always Natty that sits in the wheelchair.
Really?
Always. Sid pushes him all the way around and he won't get out and have a tantrum.
That's mad.
Yeah, but Sid's amazing. Like, I never thought I'd see him physically do that after what happened. And he's a bit of a mystery because he kind of is all there. He's kind of following everything I'm saying.
That's why he's got a hilarious sense of humour and pushes himself hard.
Talk to us, Miriam, about the syndrome, because I don't know anything about Lee syndrome. What is it? How are the symptoms?
So most disabilities are chromosomal, which is when the genetic code has something different. But mitochondrial conditions are, so in everyone's body, you have billions of these tiny things called mitochondria, and they're little factories, and they process all the energy that you take from your food, and they make something called ATP, which is your energy. And that most of the ATP in your body is taken by your brain, because that requires a lot of energy to work. So these are your like powerhouses. And in each powerhouse, there are lots of different points in it with different factory workers kind of making this product. So I carry something called the 8993T/C mutation, which means that the point 8993T to C in each one of Sid's mitochondria, there's a worker who's having a fag break and doesn't want to do the work.
Right.
Right. Right. It's called the respiratory chain. Depending which worker wants to have a fag break and doesn't want to do the work will have the impact on the rest of the body. Sid's one is the mildest, so it's actually the last one in the chain. But it's still, all of them are important. So they are making energy, but they're just not making the right product. It's not quite good enough for the brain to process. So if you inherit 97% of these defective energy cells from day one, you're not making enough energy to develop properly, to grow, to do all of those things. You're going to have problems. It will make you disabled. In the case of my my grandparents and her brothers, they all got maybe 50 or 60% and 50% working, which means, again, even with half of your mitochondria working fully and some not quite so good, you could still be okay. But as you get older, your mitochondria like decline in function. So when you get to like 40 or something, say you had 50 that were good and 50 that were bad, and then the good ones start to deteriorate, suddenly you've got more bad ones. So then the symptoms of Lee syndrome start. And Lee syndrome is devastating. So most children that get it die very quickly. The life expectancy is about 5 at best. You know, it can turn them blind, deaf, like there's no rhyme or reason to what it's going to do next. Yeah, it's very, very, very serious. It's awful. I can't say anything better than that. It's probably, if you ask me what's the worst thing that you could think of, I'm like, oh, that sounds pretty much like the worst thing. But that with SIDS mutation, it's different to all that. So most mitochondrial diseases are deadly and children die of them very, very quickly. A lot of stillbirths are actually mitochondrial diseases where the child just didn't die before they could live. I met through my travels now and meetings with Leigh syndrome networks and stuff like that, a lot of women that have lost like all 7 children to it or like some hardcore stuff. But he still, you know, we hope he will live into adult life. And I think he will. I think he's very, very strong. And they said that at Great Ormond Street, they said there's a very good chance that he will. I am dealing with something quite serious, but I suppose we all are, aren't we? So... yeah.
That's a lot to process though, to like, I mean, you clearly hang on to that hope and you live
for the day,
your life as full as you can in that moment. But it's, I think anybody would be challenged with considering that and considering the, you know, the worst thing.
Yeah, you always have to train yourself not, like the worst case scenario is your imagination.
Yeah.
You know? If you're always thinking of this, we tend to think in like multiple different directions, but then this could happen, yeah. And then this could happen. And it's, my mother is like the worst like that. like you put her in any situation and she'll find 10 things that might kill your child. Like, you know.
Well, that's it. I mean, I guess it's that certainty. So, you know, talking on the subject of certainty, nobody has that. It's bollocks anyway. No, nobody knows what's going to happen tomorrow.
No, I genuinely feel like I went through some weird process like before the lockdown because of the intensity of what had happened. And I felt the weirdest thing to me when people were like, oh, it's terrible. I was like, no, it's fine. It's great. We're off to Legoland. and the weird thing is, like, the more you love your life, the more they do, and then they get better, you know? Wow.
Yeah, so find fun in the chaos and uncertainty of it all. Not even like necessarily like meaning or like some big profound thing, but just find the fucking fun and live it.
Like, I do have faith in God and that has really helped me. But I think that if there is meaning, then it's to enjoy this amazing life that we're blessed with. And these children are like fantastic. And I don't think I would have understood that before I had Sid. We live in this very self-absorbed culture.
Yeah.
And we're always told, like, your career and the TV and the radio. And it's like, I think that those things are like, okay, yeah, they are important to people. But Sid is more important. Like, my children are the most important thing and I love them. So, you know. But I decided just not to be scared of what would happen because, you know, it's like, que sera, sera. And the less scared you are of things, the less likely they are to happen. And also, I learned that when really shit things happen, you deal with it fine. Like, you're fine. If something appalling happens, then you'll deal with it. Like, you will.
And you can't control it anyway.
I remember this point and like, and I just decided to go to Legoland with Sid. And we had the best day ever. Sid loved it. He was just like, he went on the train. We had to try and get him off the train, but he was on this Lego train about 20 times. Because when you read about Lee syndrome, it's just like your jaw drops. It's just evil, you know? So, yeah, that's kind of what I do.
I love that. Legoland is part of your medicine. I've never been to Legoland, confession. And now I really want to go. Like,
oh, it's great. I mean, my parents would never have taken me to a theme park. Like,
no, mine wouldn't. They were like totally against theme parks.
Totally, we weren't allowed to watch Disney. They were like really, really anti stuff like that. They're really like,
my dad was.
Girls, yeah. You missed out. I went to Legoland as often as my mum would take me in order to get a Legoland driving license.
What?
Yeah. I have to say, since I've had Sid, like, because we get loads of free tickets to theme parks all the time. I've been doing a lot of theme parks. He loves roller coasters and stuff, but I feel like it's the childhood I never had. But I just think it's a bit of fun, you know, and it's sort of, it's tacky, but it's kind of like for Sid. Sid loves stuff like that. So whatever makes him happy. Like you said, if you're not thinking too much about the future, then.
Yeah, living and playing, maximizing the fun. I wish I could think like you more of the time. Miriam, I'm going to take this as a like, right, okay, what would Miriam do? Right, we're going to Legoland, guys. Do you talk to Sid about what? How do you explain things to him? Do you explain it to him?
He's not going to comprehend what it is. And it's his normal. Yeah. And this is all about my fucking normal. This is Sid's fucking normal. Yeah. But for Sid, this is all he's ever known. That's just how he experiences life. He's not bothered by it.
Yeah.
You know, it laugh about it. Or, I mean, we laugh. I can't sit there and talk about mitochondria to a 5-year-old.
And how is Natty in his relationship?
Incredible. Incredible. Natty is an amazing kid. He's very, very, very bright and very funny. And he keeps saying, oh, Sid not talking. Sid not talk.
Curious.
But he loves him, you know. They cuddle up together, they sleep in the same bed. Sometimes he sits on Sid's face and tickles him. They find ways to play together, and it's really beautiful. Obviously Sid can't play, you know, like dress up as a cowboy or do anything. He can play hide and seek though, he's pretty good at that. But they non-verbally have an incredibly close connection because they've always been together. Like, we do everything. We're like a little team, me. And I make them laugh. I make them laugh all the time. So they're used to a lot of comedy, a lot of slapstick, silly voices. I mimic people that are supposed to be looking after Sid sometimes. And, you know, don't blame Sid for things all the time, though, because he knows that Sid can't defend himself. Like, he just threw a flower pot all over the bed, so there was compost all over the bedroom. And I came in the room and there was like compost all over the bed sheets, all over the floor. And I said, who did this? And he went, Sid. And I was like, Sid didn't do it. Or like, or he scribbles all over the wall and goes, oh yeah, Sid did it. I'm like, Sid does not have the motor control to do that.
Yeah, I guess it's like blaming a younger sibling or something. Anyway, it's the kind of thing that siblings do anyway.
Yeah, it's strangely normal. It's just there's no words.
Yeah,
but weirdly, there's a kid in Natty's class at nursery who's autistic and can't speak, and Natty really loves him and wants him to come over and play. And it's like, because that's what he's used to. He's developed like a connection without words.
That's interesting. Really beautiful, yeah. And do you and your partner kind of have the same, your husband have the same approach? Is he out the door to Legoland at every available opportunity too?
The complete opposite. He's like, he loves Sid to bits. Like, you know, he's always playing with him and cuddling him, and he's very close to him. But no, he's not. He's more into like safe, keep safety, and you know, like always hold Sid's hand all the time, and very concerned that he might fall over. Whereas I don't care that he falls over, because I'm like, well, it's just get back up again.
Different approaches. That must be tricky sometimes to manage.
It is. We have a unique balance of like, so basically I take the kids out on these expeditions and do all the mad stuff, like throw Sid down a water slide, or I don't know, I just did it really, really stupid. I took him ice skating.
Whoa.
He wants to do it, he likes it. I mean, I do it because I think it's funny, and I don't, like, Natty gets hurt quite a lot. He's three, he falls in, like, he, 3-year-olds are always running around and bashing their heads and falling into things. And so I just take it like that. And then Russell does the more kind of like playing at home and being at home and cooking. And but you can see that he gets anxious about Sid being as free as I let him be. You know, it's just going to be part of life. It's fine, because it's like that feeling of control and safety.
I was quite similar with Lua.
You know what's hilarious about saying this, but anytime a child falls over around, you know, in the playground or whatever, and goes like that, Sid goes,
oh my god, I get it. Like, if you don't make a big deal out of anything, they take it as it's a big deal, and then you just move on. And
this year, right, he's had one or two falls. He had one fall that was pretty bad in London Zoo, and his nose got really duffed up. And he Sid's very vain. He likes looking in the mirror.
That is beautiful.
He knows that. So when he saw his nose all duffed up, and it was just before our wedding, he was like, I've seen him have equally as bad bruises, but not on his face, and he wasn't that bothered. But it was his face. He was like, "Oh my god!" Like, he's like Kate Moss. Like, this is insured. So that, I had to do a lot of, you know, like cuddling and all that stuff. Yeah. But other than that, I thought actually he's doing pretty well. Like my friend who's got a normal kid, but he's like a bit, you know, the one they don't sit still. They're always running around.
ADHD.
Yeah, a bit like that, basically. And he's been hospitalised like 5 times this year, like broken arm, broken leg, throwing himself into a paddling pool and drowning, like, you know. So I thought, well, it's okay. He's quite cautious. I think swimming pools used to freak me out a bit because I thought, oh, he'll fall in the pool. But he knows his, like, limits, you know. He's pretty good like that. It's just the wobbliness.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those, I'm used to it, but most people around me are like, ooh. Like, wherever you go with Sid, people, like, you know, they all think he's about to fall into something. And
but
then
sometimes, like, because Bee's quite, I don't know if she's that wobbly, but she's got balance issues as well. And when she's, if she's tired, she gets really wobbly. But she's much better, like you said, about not holding hand, and it's been really hard for me to like learn to let go. But if you hold her hand or hold her, she leans on you. And actually the times when she's had some of the worst falls is when she's leaning on you, but you don't kind of realize how much, then you let go or walk away. Yeah. And she's just like, boop, like, you know,
yeah,
proper comedy slapstick fall.
It doesn't work. Just let them figure it out. That's it. And oh, what you just said about slapstick, I mean, he loves watching anything where people fall over and hurt themselves. Like,
I wonder where he got this like sense of humor from, Miriam. It's a mystery.
Weirdly enough, it was from my grandma, the one that had Leigh syndrome.
Oh really? Oh wow.
He was like extremely depressive, never got out of bed, like chain smoking 1950s housewife from Wales. She grew up in the Rhondda Valley in Wales. But she was so funny. So all her friends would just come and sit around her bed and she'd tell them all these stories and stuff, and they'd all be laughing. She was really, she knew how to make people laugh, but she just had no energy. I remember when I first picked up Sid, it's like I felt her. You know, it's something in his face. It's the mouth. I don't know, but I just felt her presence very, very strongly when he was born. And I called him Sid after her brother that died of Lee syndrome.
Wow. Like full circle.
Full circle. And apparently she said to my mum before she died in the 90s, I'm coming back to this life as a little blonde angel.
What?
What? So there's a lot of like weird superstitious. Yeah, she said that. I'm coming back as a blonde cherub or something like that. Yeah.
Well, I don't really know what to say to that.
All these weird things. Like I said, oh, we must call him Sid. Oh, I love Sid. So that's grandma's brother. Oh, you know,
there's a lot of, yeah, meaning in that.
Did you find when you were because I found that I knew a lot about the child before they were here. Like you can feel their character.
I don't know if I did. Yeah, it's hard to separate kind of what your own expectations and like thoughts are versus whether you genuinely feel it. I don't know. But I think very quickly, even before their character really develops, so like even when they're a little baby, I feel like you kind of know just from the look or they're like, or just instinctively you get a bit more of a vibe of what your child is going to be like. What you've said about Sid being really like more robust than perhaps other people might give him credit for, or that reading his diagnosis on a piece of paper would imply. I definitely got that quite early days with B as well. That kind of, she's determined. And it sounds like it's a bit from, yeah. Sid, it comes from him as well. It's not like you're pushing a kid that's like screaming, no, I don't want to, mommy. Like it sounds like it is in him and you're helping him to get there. That's interesting. I feel like that's the case with B as well. There's definitely a drive and a determination and similar to Sid.
Yeah, that's so inspiring, I think.
Yeah. Coming back to trying to control everything and planning and driving forward, it's almost like they can do that in their trying to achieve something or do something or not fall over or whatever it is. And then you're having to go in the opposite way. So go, right, actually stop trying to drive forward and be determined and control everything and get to my next career milestone or whatever the fuck it is, and actually drop everything, have fun. And go to Legoland. I keep coming back to Legoland. It's an interesting contrast, isn't it?
What Lee syndrome is going to do next is not in my control, right?
Yeah, I was going to ask, how is your way of dealing with that uncertainty and those unknowns? How does that spill over into the way that you live your life outside of parenting, Sid? Has it had an impact in terms of your career or your relationships or your life outside of parenting?
It's brought me much closer to my husband. It's hard to articulate it, but yeah, we both feel the same way about things. I think my sense of humour is much more on point now than it was.
Yeah.
I mean, it was on point, but I don't know, you get older and wiser and these experiences shape you. I know it's my normal is like being with this wobbly child. And signing and all this stuff, but I can see the funny side of it all, and I think Sid does too, because you know, you got to laugh, otherwise what, right?
Yeah.
So it hasn't affected my work that much, I think. Just my mindset, like the way I approach things. I think it will, like I said at the beginning, I think eventually I will make something quite specifically about this. Because it's most of my life, you know, is looking after these kids, you know, and then running to the studio and doing their work. Like the whole of We Do Lockdown that I did, I was like basically looking after the kids, putting them to bed, going to the studio and painting all night and then coming back. And, you know, that was what I was doing. And it does, yeah, that fearlessness, that choice, it does inform the way you look at things because it's a choice. I don't want to get into too much religious stuff, but it is a bit about kind of going, I have free will to make these decisions, but I'm not really ultimately in control.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And if there is a God, then this soul was given to me to look after. And then if a tragedy happens, a tragedy happens, you know? People say, oh, having a disabled child must be so difficult. And I think every time they say that, I say, Sid is basically like an angel child, like, you know, and he never answers back. I mean, he has his meltdowns and stuff, but it's like, don't we all? Do you know what I mean? It's just living in the moment, isn't it? And my fucking normal is, it's like it's like I'm constantly, I'm somewhere between like what I want to be, which is like get up, and oh fuck, he's gonna fall into the pond. that's
your fucking normal.
Like, okay, yeah, I can be like, I have to be like, get up, no reaction, all that. But at the same time, I'm always like, shit.
You're treading that balance.
Because he doesn't have, he's got shit balance, but it's like, I'm always like, that's the normal day. I have specific places that I go that I know are like good, that I can relax a little bit. Do you think that these experiences like make you, not being like, oh, I'm such a good person, but make you more humble and more...
Shit, yeah. Actually, a friend once said to me, I'm a much nicer person since I had B. And then, and it kind of, she was a bit drunk, and I think it came out that she basically didn't like me very much in the past, but she likes me now. But in a weird way, I kind of understand it. Like, I feel like I definitely don't have as much empathy. Oh, yeah, I was probably a bit more in a bubble of my own, like, without sounding wanky, like my own career success and like life success. And yeah, it was
no,
fucking
I
great.
Totally get it. But I think this has made me much more like cynical. I think I was a lot more like romantic about life, and now I'm much more like, I can't stand the shit. I think being a parent of a child with a disability, your bullshit-o-meter is just like, you just don't have time. I'm much more like snappier and much more like to the point, where before it would just be like, yeah, life is great. Oh my God. Ah, la, 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 la. No. So, I don't know. I don't know if it's made me...
It made you more grounded.
Yeah, definitely. Plus, I'm a Pisces, so I was very like, ooh, floaty. Yeah, that got cut very quickly.
I think as an artist, like before I had kids, I was extremely cynical and almost the opposite to you, actually. Like really, like slightly angry, cynical, very self-motivated, acerbic, and this has made me kind of happy.
That's great.
That's beautiful.
Free. And like connected me to something. Yeah. Does that sound ridiculously dweet?
No.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. And so everyone's experiences will be different, but actually if it can bring you a freeing, it sounds like actually all of us have described something that's freeing.
Don't have any societal expectations anymore.
Completely, yeah.
All this garbage that we tell our children, I don't know what's true anymore. Like, you don't have to think about any of that. Oh, what colleges you go? Oh, what university? Oh.
Oh, fuck that shit. Yeah, that is very freeing not to, yeah. With my older daughter, who's 9 now, yeah, there's like, oh, what senior school is she going to go to? And there's all these kind of conversations. And it's just so nice to feel, actually, I just want her to be happy, and wherever she's happy and wants to go, if she can go there, let's do that.
Life's too short for that shit, man.
I agree. So thank you so much for like coming on. Yeah, and giving us the Miriam Elia guide to life, guide to being a send mum and having fun.
It's a blessing, seriously. Oh. Everything in my life that I thought was bad or like terrifying turned out to be a good thing in the end, like a really good thing. So
that's lovely.
Wow. We should leave it on that note.
Definitely.
Thanks so much. That's been really great to chat to you.
So, so good to have you on.
We should all go for a drink soon or something.
Oh, hell yeah. Thank you so much for listening to the Fucking Normal podcast. We love making this podcast.
Yes, we do.
We're part of a much bigger team, almost exclusively all parents of disabled children. And our goal is to reach as many people as possible and create a community of support for parents and carers who share our experiences.
So, if you've liked what you've heard, please like and subscribe so that we can reach out to more people. You can find more information on this and other episodes at fuckingnormalpodcast.com. That's fkingnormalpodcast.com. You can join us on Facebook and on Instagram at fuckingnormal_podcast. That's fkingnormal_podcast. You can get all the links and more information in the show notes below.
So thank you so much for listening all the way to the end. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Wake me up.